Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
When our families are being deported, pulled over, detained, and incarcerated, there is nothing more important than to say we will not stand for this.
It's a privilege for me to be the mayor-elect and the future mayor of the city of Tucson. What I want to do is continue moving our city to the next level of progress and prosperity.
The public needs to become engaged. We as registered voters need to have an open and honest debate as to what we want our elected representative to do in our name or not to do in our name.
It was never intended to impinge on people's rights to stand out in front of the courthouse and take pictures and even with permission to come into the courthouse and take pictures, but we wanted some control over making sure that we knew who was going to be there doing that and that it didn't interfere. The people that did it were going to be respectful of the rights of the people who didn't want to be filmed.
And with us to talk about some election results, including Tucson rejecting a sanctuary city designation, recall efforts against a couple of Arizona members of Congress, and more, are Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground, and Chad Campbell, Senior Vice President of Strategies 360. Guys, welcome back.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So, Chad, sanctuary city designation goes down in flames in Tucson, which I thought was a liberal Arizona city. So what happened there?
There's bipartisan opposition to this measure from day one. I think most people that looked at this policy knew it was a very, very bad idea. You had a broad coalition, business leaders, community leaders, Dems, Republicans, a little bit of everything that really came together and ran a very strong opposition campaign. This was a very activist-led type of campaign on the pro side. And I think most people, even on the Democratic side that are very sympathetic to immigration issues, as most of us are on the Democratic side, realize this is not the way to go about addressing immigration policy. We're worried about the cutoff of potential state and federal funding, the infringement on some law enforcement issues and kind of tying their hands. So I think the voters did the right thing and came together and rejected a very bad idea.
Chuck, how do you read it? How much of it was pragmatism?
Well, serious pragmatism. They didn't want to give Trump bulletin board material. It's like one of the, it's an election year, people. Let's not put something up on the board that he's going to make a literally federal case out of, because they would have sued. That gives him all kinds of material and opportunity. The mayor, the council, as Chad pointed out, the business community all realized wrong way to go. And so I think they unified in opposition, hence the overwhelming rejection.
Chad, how much, if at all, do you think the bills that were filed a little while back at the legislature, pre-filed for next year, dealing with this issue, did that affect the outcome at all, or was it already sort of predetermined at that point?
Probably a little bit of both. I mean, I think that it helped people realize, again, kind of reinforce why they needed to shut this down. And you're going to see this conversation anyways at the legislature about preempting any, future actions by the city. We've already seen some conversations from Mr. Kavanaugh, I remember, and some others. So you're going to see this regardless. But I do think it helped. But I also think it reinforced the message of the campaign from the beginning that this is going to bring a lot of unintended consequences for the city of Tucson, for national debate, as Chuck just pointed out about around the Trump campaign. And again, I think a lot of people took the pragmatic route and just shut this thing down.
Chuck, even though the measure failed and failed by a lot, as Steve referenced, do you think it still becomes part of the discussion leading into the 2020 elections?
Oh, it clearly is. It's clearly, as Chad alluded to, still part of the Democratic vernacular. I mean, Bernie this week came out and said, let's get rid of ICE, So, yeah, I mean, those are the things that are the really progressive part of the Democratic Party. Like, Republicans have their really conservative sides, which we may talk about later in the show. but you get this polar reaction from both sides. And so we're going to be living in that. You guys will be talking about it. You'll have other people on this. We're not going anywhere here, people.
You'll have to come back and do that.
Yeah.
So moving forward then, Chuck, when it comes to this particular issue, we often talk about, is there an actual middle ground when it comes to immigration reform or something like that? That very rarely happens, even talk about it in a presidential election year. But does this indicate that Tucson voters are willing to be pragmatic about this, even as Chad said, many of them support immigrant rights?
Well, we've seen that in Arizona. I always say that I think Arizona voters are the most astute and mature voters when it comes to the discussion of immigration.
You get paid to convince them of things.
Well, we've been baptized in the cauldron of conflict out here, right? I mean, we were ground zero for the problem when in 9 and 10 when the border was just a joke. And the cartels, which are actively operating on the other side of the border, were using it for human smuggling, and we were the state. And so we've been exposed to this for a longer period of time than most, but we also understand, as the governor articulates and other people articulate, the importance of the economic relationship with our neighbor. It is our largest trading partner. We're now trying to get NAFTA 2.0 approved, USMCA agreement. There's ads up extolling the virtues of that. People in Arizona understand the healthy, you know, having a healthy border and a healthy economy and a healthy trade relationship is good. We need a secure border, though. And so I think there's opportunities here, maybe this post-election cycle, depending on who gets elected and what the Congress looks like. I got to remain hopeful because I just am sick of it. I mean, literally am sick of it. We've been talking about this issue literally since 2009, all front page, every day. Murders on the other side of the border happened this week. I mean, it's just crazy that we can, as a country, understand the importance of the economic relationship and the security relationship and bring some maturity to that discussion.
Yeah, it seems, Chad, it could be a fairly simple discussion, but it becomes complicated by the fact that parties have to get in their own camps.
Yeah, I mean, I have not seen a poll in the past 10 plus years that doesn't show the vast majority of Americans want common sense immigration reform. They want a secure border, like Chuck just pointed out, but they also want a fair and accessible pathway to becoming a U.S. citizen for people coming over to this country that want to be part of the American opportunity, right? And that's time and time again. I don't care who polls it, who asks the questions, where they ask the questions. The majority of Americans want that. The problem is, for a long time, I think, and you see it with the Trump factor, the far right has really leveraged this issue to stoke their base and radicalize their base kind of on the issue and play that fear card. And now, unfortunately, I think, to the point that Bernie's comments this week, now the left is kind of taking it to the other side and radicalizing the issue a little bit to try to stoke the flames on the left side of the base. At some point, I think common sense has to win out, to Chuck's point, hopefully. And I think a lot of it depends on who gets elected, obviously, after the 2020 election, who's in the White House. And, hopefully in my eyes, that is not Donald Trump. And maybe at that point, there'll be some common sense again and some people that can come together from both sides of the aisle and lead this immigration debate and actually fix the system and make it fair.
Well, interestingly, one of the other results from this week, Regina Ribeiro elected mayor of Tucson. And in a conversation this week that Steve actually had with her, she talked about the fact that, she understands sort of the idea behind the Sanctuary City Initiative. And she actually went all the way back to SB 1070 as saying, this is sort of why we are at this point now. Chuck, I'm wondering, you're obviously there at the time working with Governor Brewer. Have you seen sort of an evolution of how Arizonans think about this issue over those, 9 years, even maybe starting a little before that?
Most definitely. I think we've seen it. I've seen it in poll. I mean, we went back when McCain and Kyle were trying to do the Gang of Eight proposal, and we tested elements of that within the Republican electorate. They were, they weren't wildly popular, but you got over 50% of a, it took some courage for Republicans to do that. And so it is there. There is an opportunity there. But as Chad alluded to, what we're talking about is these very partisan voices that rise up on the left and the right. And of course, the proverbial dog whistle, we all run to go condemn it, right, or to talk about it rather than go, well, here's an opportunity that we should talk about that. And I understand your fear of change as it relates to economic change or your fear of change as it relates to, the demographic change of the country. But realistically, that's always happening. That's always happened in our country, and that's the way our country has continued to grow and get stronger.
Chad, let me quickly ask you about Regina Ribeiro. I mean, this was not a surprise. I mean, Tucson is still, despite 205, still a left-leading city. What to you is the significance of her election as mayor?
Well, I mean, again, I think you have a rising star. She's a very good candidate. She's very good on the city council, a Latina mayor of, you know, the second largest city in the state now. It's a big deal. And I think, you know, she didn't have an easy campaign by any means. She was running against, you know, Steve Farley, who had great name ID and who has served in the legislature. I served with him when we were down there together. And you had Randy Dortmund, who was a business leader in the community. It wasn't an easy pathway. And she actually walked away with that election when it was all said and done, which I think showed the strength of her and her campaign. You know, I think that she's going to be, along with, you know, Mayor Gallego up here in Phoenix, I think they're going to be two very dynamic female leaders, not just here in Arizona, but across the country. And we were talking about it off air before, you know, I think we're one of four states now total with two females leading the two largest cities within their state. And that's a big deal. And I think it shows the changing mood of Arizona's demographics and where we're headed as an electorate. I think that's kind of the writing on the wall that we're still heading. We're becoming a purple state across the board. And our bigger cities are becoming more and more progressive. And even the suburbs are starting to creep into that mix now.
Chuck, a couple minutes before the break, let's talk about something else from election night. Just generally, a lot of overrides passed when it came to education funding. Does that sort of indicate there should be more momentum when the legislative session starts in January to put even more money? Yes, we realize that 20 by 2020 has occurred. There has been more money put in, but people want even more money put in. We're going to see ballot measures, presumably, when it comes to deciding, when it comes to raising more funds for K-12. Did anything from Tuesday night indicate to you that there is even more passion for we need more money in our schools?
There's clearly passion out there to fund education and to fund it. You know, they weren't overwhelming victories. Some of them really hard fought. Our firm was doing the Mesa campaign, one of four campaigns we were running. And, you know, that had lost in the previous cycle, and we came back and ran a hard campaign to get that done. So there's momentum there, but it's not easy, and it has to be reflected with a plan that is effective. You're going to hear from Republicans. I heard Warren Peterson, the House Majority Leader, just yesterday say, as of this year, we will be spending a record amount of money per student in Arizona than at any time in our history. That will be a Republican talking point going forward. And, you know, then you get into the lament that Republicans will always say, oh, you just want to throw money at it because that's all it's going to take. So you need a plan. I mean, and so not just the discussion about money, but achievement and transparency. And, you know, Kathy Hoffman, the state superintendent, has been talking about that. We had a really good conversation earlier this year with the Save Our Schools group and the Speaker of the House, Mr. Bowers, about that very thing. You got record revenue right now. You got about $700 million in surplus revenues. So I think there will be a discussion down there. I know in Michelle Udall, a representative in Mesa, is really working hard on trying to figure out how to use this two-year cycle to frame a discussion, hopefully, for the 22 gubernatorial cycle. Well, we funded that, and it worked. Now we need to fund it permanently.
Now, Chad, based on what Chuck just said about Warren Peterson, though, does this look like it could be more of a fight than expected? Because there are some Republicans who like to say, yes, we were involved in raising education funding. Others want to fight it.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have your hardline conservative, you know, I put that in quotes, conservative Republicans that are going to fight against any type of education funding discussion. That's just, it's in their DNA. I think they cannot resist it no matter what the voters want. But, you know, I've seen polling, very recent polling. The voters of Arizona want to fund our K-12 schools. There is no doubt about that in my mind. I think the results from this week, again, showed that. But, you know, to Chuck's point, excuse me, it's the devil's in the details, and you're going to see a lot of proposals down there being discussed. You're going to see, you know, probably several discussions outside of the legislature about just putting an initiative on there. I think maybe one of those will get traction. And I think you're going to have a very robust debate next year on this issue.
You have, you know, Jeff Winninger was out there yesterday talking about how investments in our K-12 system is actually an investment in our economy, which is true, in our vocational and educational training programs, which is true, and our community college systems, which is true, and how do we replace the workforce that we have? So the Republican vernacular narrative on it is changing, and you can see that in some places, which gives it hope. Devil in the details, totally.
Yeah,
robust debate.
Yes. Robust debate.
All right, that is Chuck Coughlin. Also, here is Chad Campbell with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday Newscap on KJZZ in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today are Chuck Coughlin of High Ground and Chad Campbell of Strategies 360.
All right, so guys, this week we've heard news about two recall attempts, one against Democratic Congressman Greg Stanton, the other against Republican Congresswoman Debbie Lesko. The word we've been using around here is long shot. Is that the right word for these, Chuck?
So you're saying I got a shot.
You're saying there's a chance, right?
You're saying there's a chance. Yeah, no. What typically these things are is sort of like the impeachment process. It's a narrative that gets bled into the election cycle, and it's used to stimulate a part of the base for a turnout mechanism. Will it succeed? No way.
The fact that there is a recall effort.
Yeah. It's part of, I mean, we're within a year of these people being reelected anyway. So, Hey, let's start it a little early and let's start another conversation. Let's get rid of them now, you know? So, yeah, that's a narrative thing.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me, I would put the Cardinals' chances of winning the Super Bowl at a much higher level than either of these recalls being successful. That gives you any idea of where I think this is headed. to Chuck's point, it's these are no-goes from the beginning. They're usually led by activists or people that have an agenda or some attachment to, you know, trying to create a narrative for the campaign later on. But they have no shot. Neither one of these do.
So just the fact constitutionally we can do it means we shouldn't. It doesn't mean we should do it.
No. Yeah. Same conversation we're having in Washington right now, right?
It's like, well, I disagree with that one. Yeah. I think the Washington one is a much more valid conversation.
But you're within a year of the election cycle, and there is some things to discuss there, right? But it's linked to that very discussion.
Yeah, no, it's linked to it.
If they believe that that is an impeachable offense of which he's done and they've opposed impeachment, then, you know, they're acting illegally too. I mean, you hear the narrative there, but it's like snow. It's like ice cream in the Arizona sun. And it just doesn't last very long out there.
Well, is there a danger, though, like if these recall attempts, for example, if they just totally fizzle out or, you know, if they really make an effort to get signatures and can't actually do it, does that actually backfire? Does it have the opposite effect?
No, because you're not going to be talking about the activist base that Chad's talking about. Will while they're passing petitions for this recall, they'll also be passing the candidate signature to get them on the ballot. It's a way of just organizing and stimulating your base to go be active.
And I mean, the one thing the candidates will do if they're smart is use this to raise money. So they will use this. They will blast out emails. They'll get on social media. They will talk about the fact that they are being attacked by fill in the blank, and we need more money to defend ourselves. And I mean, I did that myself when I had a recall against me when I was in the legislature. So,
did you raise a lot of money off that?
Oh yeah, it was very good, useful fundraising tool.
Chuck, whenever you join us, we always want to give you a chance to talk about the state GOP chair Kelly Ward. And so, because I know you love talking
about it.
Thanks
so much.
Yeah, so let's talk about this idea that she has almost an electoral college approach, as opposed to the actual popular vote. And this may be indicative that she's concerned about how Republicans may do in this next cycle. But let's get past the fact that it's unconstitutional. What do you think of the concept and the fact she's bringing it up?
Well, it's bred of the looming problem that the GOP is having in suburban and more urban areas, that we're losing those areas by wider and wider. Maricopa County used to be reliably red. No, it's not anymore. There's parts of it, but I could attribute that also to, you know, the dominant narrative that is happening and Trump's narrative, which is not appealing to some of those more centrist to social conservatives and fiscal conservatives, not appealing to them. So what she does is, here's an idea that helped, you know, the elites. We could eliminate the Electoral College always, you know, you hear the elites on the coast always saying, well, our votes are devalued. Well, who are those elites on the coast? Predominantly urban voters in large cities. So she's like, hey, that's a good idea for them. That could work for us, too, because your vote won't count as much if you live in an urban core area. You know, it's rather than resolving the problem and understanding the change and understanding how to market to those voters and talk to them, there's still a bunch of things that Ward and the president could be talking about that they are in agreement with them, how strong the economy is, their objections to trade with China and the human rights violations in China. I think there's a fairly uniform agreement on why, let's get out of the Afghanistan. Let's get out of having our people die in the Middle East. Let's let the Russians do that. That's fine. So there's a bunch of narratives there that they could spend their time on, but we don't hear a lot about that.
So rather than tell a story, let's just sort of disenfranchise certain voters.
I mean, I think the chemtrails have finally gotten to Kelly Ward's brains on this one. I think they finally soaked in far enough. You know, and to Chuck's point, I mean, and I said this right when I saw this, first thing that came out of my mind was, you know, rather than trying to rig the election system, why don't you actually start working with the majority of voters and give them what they want? And I mean, to Chuck's point, there are some things I think they could tell to these voters and tell a story that would relate to these voters. But at the end of the day, the GOP has continued attacks on female access to health care. They've continued attacks on education, continued attacks on minorities under this president. There's just way too many issues that they're way far off on urban and suburban voters. And so, you know, I think that rather than try to figure out how to diversify the party and expand their scope on policy and the outlook on how to govern, Kelly Ward just wants to disenfranchise people. And I don't think that's the solution to our problems here.
I think what we can
state.
Reliably, I know Chad's fond of our GOP party chairman, is I'm, you know, I'm fond of Felicia, which I
but,
actually
but who are you? Who are you more fond of, though? Felicia or Kelly Ward?
You know, hey, you
I would say this about a party chairman as a role. Let's not use them as a bellwether as to what we're talking about, because Felicia said some stuff a couple weeks ago with regard to the president being a Russian operative, which, yeah, maybe that didn't go over too well either. So, you know, it's let's pay attention. Let's pay attention to the long-term game. Let's try and encourage a dialogue, as Chad sometimes does. And so, you know, and try and solve problems.
Chuck, is this the issue with not so much urban, more suburban, sort of outer ring of city voters moving away from the Republican Party? Is this a Trump issue or is this a full party issue? Like if the, you know, let's say it's not Donald Trump on the ticket.
Is there any difference between Trump and the party, though?
Well,
but, that's my question, right?
A slightly larger question, but like
if
it's a different person, if it's Doug Ducey, for example. And of course, politics is not in a vacuum, but is it how much of that is about Donald Trump and how much of it is about the party?
It's a lot about the president. It's a lot about this president and his narrative. I mean, come on. We all know we've gone from John Kyle and John McCain to Kyrsten Sinema and Martha McSally and maybe another Democrat in a year. I mean, there is a serious marketing problem going on here. And you have to understand that if you're going to win statewide elections in Arizona. Otherwise, you can go home with your, you know, your angst and your bitterness and your Twitter feed, and you can go talk to all your friends all you want. But that's, you know, that's not going to get you anywhere. And so, you know, it is Donald Trump's party right now. I mean, we don't see a different voice. Romney's sort of floating out there right now in that space, and probably safely so, coming from Utah, but having a presidential run in his background. But there, who else? I mean, I don't. There's no other real strong Republican voices.
I mean, Lindsey Graham's doing such a bang up job of criticizing the president.
Yeah.
He's been killing it.
Lindsey has traded in his card and adopted a new card. And so,
yes.
You know, it's the loyalty party of that's going on right now. And it's tough. It's really tough. And, you know, but you see political figures like our governor trying to narrate the role on Mexico, trying to relate on trade and policy. He's down there this week with the Arizona-Mexico Commission. I mean, there are people out there trying to get issues narrowly crafted for their benefit without offending the president.
Chat about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, like, there are some Republicans at the local level doing what they need to do. You have Kasich, people like that. But for the most part, everybody in Congress, the contortions they're making to defend this president, they should all be in Cirque du Soleil at this point. They defend him no matter what he does. And they've lost credibility, quite frankly. I mean, they are the party of Trump, and it's not the same GOP that it was just 3 years ago.
Cirque du Soleil is a little harder to do than what they are.
Chad Campbell, Strategy 360. Chuck Coughlin doing his circus act at High Ground. Chuck, thanks. Chad, thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Guys.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.